Thanks, Kirk. Greetings, everyone. I'm Willie. I'll be presenting on chicken liver outbreaks in the U.S. and how learning from these outbreaks is helping us identify targets for prevention. So first, some basics. Chicken livers are regulated by the USDA Food Safety Inspection Service, or FSIS. And they are a component of a group of chicken organs called giblets, edible organs, along with gizzards and hearts. Common food presentations include chicken liver pate and fried livers. And certain chicken liver dishes seem to be associated with certain regions and niche communities. Consumer preferences and practices are very relevant to this issue. Some consumers, as we know, choose to eat undercooked food, such as raw milk, tiger meat, which is raw beef, and chicken livers. They may think that undercooked food is more palatable, offers certain health benefits, or that it carries no or low risk. Recipes and preparation methods calling for undercooking of chicken liver dishes are common on the internet, and listed here are a few examples. The concern for chefs and consumers is that fully cooking chicken liver pate in particular will decrease palatability. There's a real concern about texture. Here are some quotes from consumer comments on the internet. Perhaps my favorite is the bottom one. He or she feeding raw liver to the son, 14 months old, since he was 5 months. Also raw egg yolk every day and raw goat's milk. It is scary at first, but I weighed the risks against the advantages to his health, and he is a thriving little human. Don't fixate on the raw factor, okay? Which might be okay if chicken livers weren't so contaminated with pathogens, for which there is quite a bit of evidence. First, the external surface of chicken livers has been shown to be contaminated with Campylobacter and Salmonella, like other chicken products. A second body of research has demonstrated that the internal tissues of between 10 and 90% of chicken livers are contaminated with Campy. And in a third group of studies, specific pathogen-free chickens orally challenged with Campy and Salmonella have shown that the pathogens are found in the livers within hours of inoculation. So, internal contamination plus undercooking equals a recipe for illness. And so it's not surprising that we've seen outbreaks causing chicken livers to gain quite a bit of notoriety in epi circles. This is a sampler of online quotes from news stories and publications from the past few years. So, we decided recently that we needed to learn more about chicken liver outbreaks so we can try to prevent them. So we conducted a review of chicken liver associated outbreaks in the U.S. during 2000 through 2015. We included only outbreaks with culture confirmed infection, and this ended up being just Campy and Salmonella. Sources of data included the FSIS outbreak database and CDC's National Outbreak Reporting System, or NORS. And here's the CDC NORS disclaimer. Some of the characteristics of interest in the study are listed there at the bottom of the slide. We found that 22 outbreaks had been reported during the study period. And this graph shows the chicken liver associated outbreaks of Campy and Salmonella. Number of outbreaks are on the y-axis, the x-axis shows the year. As you can see, the number of reported outbreaks increased in the latter years of the study period. In fact, over half of the outbreaks occurred in the last 2 years of the study. This might be because more outbreaks were actually occurring, but another explanation that I think is more likely is that outbreak detection might have improved. So here are some characteristics of the outbreaks. There were a total of 331 reported illnesses in these 22 outbreaks. Overall, there was a median of 6 illnesses per reported outbreak. The median number of illnesses changed, however, during the study period. So during 2000 through 2013, the median number of illnesses was 9 per outbreak, and during 2014 through 2015, it was 4 per outbreak, and this difference was significant. In other words, the reported outbreaks got smaller as time went on. And one explanation of this phenomenon is that the outbreaks that were happening were actually getting smaller. Another explanation, however, and again, this is the one I think is more likely, is that we were doing a better job of detecting smaller outbreaks as time went on. As for etiology, almost all of the outbreaks were campy, with a handful of salmonella, and in one outbreak, both pathogens were involved. The findings for sex and age weren't very remarkable, and there were some data limitations, so I won't discuss them here, but we can talk later if you're interested. Okay, this map shows the number of times that states were included in these outbreaks by state of case patient residence. The outbreaks were primarily clustered in the Northeast, followed by Western states, followed by upper Midwestern states. Okay, so the outbreak review uncovered the following key factors that can help us target prevention. First, chicken liver pate, or a similar dish such as mousse, was implicated in 17 or 89% of the 19 outbreaks with data available on specific chicken liver dish type. Second, undercooking was identified as a contributing factor in 20 or 95% of the 21 outbreaks for which data on contributing factors were available. And misleading labeling and product appearance also played a key role in one outbreak. Third, food was prepared in food service institutions, including restaurants, schools, and assisted living facilities in 19 or 86% of the 22 outbreaks. And restaurants specifically were involved in 16 or 73% of the 22. So to recap some of the key findings of the outbreak review, chicken liver associated outbreaks have been increasing in recent years, and the typical outbreak is campylobacteriosis associated with pate or similar dish that was undercooked at a restaurant or other food service institution. So again, the take-home points: pate, undercooked at a restaurant. So these key outbreak findings, as well as the fact that chicken livers are internally contaminated, point towards specific focus areas for prevention opportunities, including pre-harvest, so before slaughter, FSIS regulated establishments that produce chicken livers for human consumption, consumer education, and particularly important because they showed up so often in the outbreak review, restaurant level interventions. Okay, so pre-harvest, I'm not going to spend much time on pre-harvest, but suffice it to say that certain on-farm measures have been shown to decrease pathogens in chickens before slaughter. Establishments. So FSIS is developing guidance for chicken liver producing establishments. The goal is to reduce pathogens in chicken livers before they are distributed for consumption. And establishments should address food safety hazards in their hazard analysis and critical control points, or HACCP system. And some details about certain interventions we're considering, such as freezing, organic acid wash, and labeling, are on this slide. And then finally, I wanted to mention that FSIS began sampling chicken livers from establishments and analyzing them for Campylobacter and Salmonella in November 2016. Now, this is a rinsate sample, so the results reflect contamination only on the external surface. It's too early to report specific results, but we have been seeing positives. Another intervention area is consumer education, which we could really use your help with through health department communications, et cetera. The goal is to educate consumers and to modify any risky behavior. FSIS recently published a blog on foodsafety.gov with the main message to cook pate to 165. We're also updating some of our chicken liver recommendations on our FSIS website. And recently, FSIS personnel presented at a consumer food safety education conference. So So lastly, since the outbreaks clearly showed that most of them involved pâté that was undercooked at a restaurant or other food service institution, restaurant-level interventions, in my opinion, is the most important area to focus our prevention efforts. The goals here are to inform chefs of risks and encourage safe cooking at restaurants. We are collaborating with food safety stakeholders and partners at many levels, so local, state, federal, academia, to come up with the most effective communication strategy, targeting chefs in industry, trade associations, cooking schools, etc. And we're also considering a CFP issue with FDA to update the food code to include something specific about chicken livers. Since some chefs are undercooking chicken liver dishes, especially pâté, apparently because they are worried about the taste and texture of fully cooked pâté, what we really need is a safe alternative cooking method that maintains palatability. FSIS doesn't have jurisdiction over restaurants, and interventions are so much more effective and better accepted if a collaborative approach is taken. So we need your help to develop the best restaurant-level interventions. I'm going to just kind of skip over this, but I just wanted you to be aware that, of course, there's remaining research questions regarding chicken livers, and FSIS has a research priorities list. We're collaborating with the Agricultural Research Service to do some of this research. High-pressure processing has been studied in other chicken products as a potential intervention, not specifically in livers, but that is maybe an avenue of research that might show some promise. And in conclusion, chicken livers are an emerging food safety problem. Outbreak characteristics that stood out from the review, three of these are pâté, undercooked, at a restaurant, indicate prevention targets that we could focus on. And to tackle this problem, a multi-tiered collaborative approach is needed. Finally, I'd like to make a request. FSIS is interested in receiving chicken liver outbreak isolates for study. If you might be willing and able to share human or food outbreak isolates, please let me know. My email address is on the next slide. I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors listed here, some of which are in attendance, as well as the partners and stakeholders who have been or will be working with us on this project. Thank you.
Thank you, Willie. We are open for questions.
Matt Weiss, CDC. Really interesting talk. So I guess one question about the chicken liver study that you guys are doing. Are you going to be doing subtyping of those isolates and kind of looking at that against what we see in PulseNet? It just occurs to me that, you know, recently, certainly with FDA-regulated products, there's been a lot of environmental testing that sort of, I think, along the lines of the outbreak Kate sort of presented, that, you know, wasn't done initially for an outbreak-related purpose, but ended up being really critical to an investigation. So are there any plans to kind of look and see how that might jive against clinical illness?
So I want to make sure I understand your question. Are you talking about the sampling that we're doing in establishments, or the isolates from past outbreaks were...
The sampling in establishments. So are you guys going to sort of look at that sort of compared to what we see in, say, PulseNet or NCBI?
Right. Well, my understanding is that we're doing whole genome sequencing on 100% nearly of the isolates. So, yes, it should be included.
Patsy Kelso, Vermont State Epi. Can you clarify, I understand your request for human and environmental isolates. Can you clarify USDA's role with human isolates versus CDC's role and what you'd be doing that's different than what CDC might be doing?
Sure. So we've been collaborating with the Agricultural Research Service on that, and their interest is not clinical, but it's more... we just want the strain, whether that comes from human or environmental food isolates. And the interest is to see if there's any particular virulence characteristics or maybe survival characteristics, heat tolerance, et cetera, that might be associated with some of those strains, and see whether they're, you know, they might be different from other strains. We'll see whether there's a certain set of strains that cause more or worse illness or are prone to surviving intervention.
Hi, Joel Massey, EIS West Virginia. Great talk. I'm curious about the increase in the number of outbreaks, 14 to 15, and you mentioned you think maybe we're doing a better job of detecting it. I wonder if you could, this might be outside the scope, but I'm wondering if you could elaborate on what do you think might be contributing to that. I know, at least in my state, CIDT, the culture-independent diagnostic tests, have really increased case identification, but it hasn't necessarily helped us isolate outbreaks, because sometimes we get so busy trying to do the epi-link between these cases that we kind of miss the forest for the trees, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Even though we have a whole lot more cases of CAMPI, we're not necessarily detecting more of the outbreaks. Could you comment on that?
Thanks. Sure. It's a really intriguing thing, and I mean, the best answer is probably I don't know, but I have a few thoughts. CAMPI became nationally notifiable in 2015. Though before that, most states and jurisdictions had reporting rules for CAMPI, so I don't think that policy changed a whole lot in reality, but there is that. In 2011, there was kind of the outbreak that I think put this issue on the map, the chicken liver issue, and that was the kosher broiled Salmonella Heidelberg outbreak, and very large outbreak. And since then, there are kind of additional outbreaks reported, investigated in MMWRs and things like that. So I think people have it more on their radar when they're investigating CAMPI cases as a potential vehicle. I think just advances, like you say, in some of the subtypic techniques. There may be more states that are typing CAMPI isolates, et cetera. So I think it's a number of factors.
Hey, Zach Moore from North Carolina. I understand the emphasis on trying to get cooks and to do the right thing, even though it sounds like they might not want to go along with that. Is there any talk about consumer notice or requiring some kind of messaging for consumers of pate about the risks?
In restaurants? Or
restaurants or wholesale?
So we think, we don't know for sure, but from the outbreaks and just kind of our general understanding of the issue, that this is largely a restaurant issue. It could be that we're just not picking up cases and outbreaks that originate from, you know, products purchased at the grocery store. But it seems like it's kind of a hip thing to do to, you know, undercook chicken liver pate only in certain restaurants. It's not your everyday restaurant you're going to encounter this product. As far as restaurant-level consumer advisory, it's already in the food code that undercooked animal products need to have that advisory on the menu.
Pate is denoted as undercooked animal products.
So that's an issue. So while that's in place, there's varying degrees of understanding or compliance. Certain chefs maybe they don't even know that it's an undercooked product or that it's an issue or that it's contaminated. And then you have the consumer level, even if they do know, a lot of consumers may not be aware that they're ordering an undercooked product when they order chicken liver pate, just because this is kind of the routine thing. And so that's what we're trying to do, raise awareness about this issue on multiple levels. Consumers, chefs, and others.
You got a quick one, Rob?
Yeah, Rob Tokes at CDC. Two very quick comments. First of all, the United Kingdom has exactly the same curve, and nothing in their surveillance has changed. And they know that it's because of the spread of this popularity of slightly pink chicken mousse. So I think it's this new practice and this new hip phenomenon. That's what we're seeing. Surveillance for Campylobacter outbreaks hasn't changed much in this country either. Second thing, last time I was in a chicken processing plant, I watched the livers come out of each chicken one by one, go into a large bucket. Mm-hmm. Then the chicken carcasses were cleaned and many further treatments occurred on the carcasses. And then at least at what I was watching, then a liver came out of the bucket and went back into the carcass. So the livers never got cleaned up at all. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's still the general practice, that livers are sort of this bypass on all the other pathogen reduction techniques. Is that still the case? If you're selling carcasses with giblets in them.
Right. Yes, there's multiple concerns all around about this issue, and you know, just personally, why someone would eat a liver is you know, undercooked is beyond me. But so yes, you know, and that gets to external contamination, I think. And yeah, that is a problem, and certainly we're seeing positives from these rinsates. But more to the point, I think, is this internal contamination issue, because chefs, even if they throw them in a pan and sear them for a few minutes, assuming that the entire external surface gets seared, that might take care of the external contamination problem. And if it was an internal issue, maybe we wouldn't be seeing this. So my strong suspicion is that it's despite what external contamination issues and, like you say, deviation, you know, whatever at the processing establishment, it's the internal pathogen issue that's at the heart of this.
And it might be possible, given that they're all in a bucket already, it might be possible to do something with the bucket before they go out.
That would get internal?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Maybe high pressure processing or irradiation or something. Who knows what will be accepted. So.
Right. Brett, thank you, Willie.
Thank you.